Okay, so I think I'm going to begin, and as I began last week, if anyone wants to ask any questions, as this is live, feel free to use the chat box, which is above or below the video feed, I guess, or you can ask them at the end of this as well. That's all fine. And then finally, if you want to, you can also just shoot me an email as well, if that works for you as well. And if you do it in the middle, I may answer depending on whether or not I'm going to get to it or not, or whether or not just I have time to type out the answer, or I can answer it verbally as well. So last week we had discussed a particular case that had been claimed, a particular book that had been claimed that it was a forgery, and the book in particular was the Besamim Rosh, which is Tshuva Sefer, when we'll go into a little bit more detail about it in a moment. And we had seen last week, we had sort of begun the history, as it was, of the Besamim Rosh, where we had spoken about his earlier work, that is, the editor of the Besamim Rosh, Shaul Berlin, had published prior to the Besamim Rosh a different work under a pseudonym by the name of, and the name of the work attacked one of the leading rabbis of the day, and therefore was highly controversial. That work is known as the Mitzvah Yaksiel, and was specifically attacking Rabbi Paul Hamburger, who was the chief rabbi of the triple community of Altona, Hamburg, and Braunschweig. And we had seen that in this particular case, many people came out against the author. At the time, they didn't know necessarily it was a pseudonym, and in fact, they banned the book, and they banned the author. And we discussed last week that that the ban, there was a dispute as to the efficacy of the ban and whether or not a particular Beis Din has the ability to ban someone else in another city. But be that as it may, there is no doubt that Mitzvah Yekusiel was viewed by many rabbis as an affront to Rabbi Paul Hamburger. Now, that said, there are others that didn't necessarily take that view. And in fact, as I mentioned last week, the point of the Mitzvah Yekusiel was a very overt attack on Rabbi Paul Hamburger. And let me explain. Rather than, for example, publishing something in a journal that rabbis wouldn't read, at the time, and we're going to discuss this, we'll touch on this later as well, there was a journal put out in Berlin called Hamaasif, which was a Haskalah journal. And in fact, the book, Mitzvah Yekusiel, is discussed there. But Mitzvah Yekusiel was not published there. In other words, it wasn't serialized, for example, or appeared there prior to its separate publication. And the reason being is because at the beginning of Mitzvah Yekusiel, he actually notes that he sent this particular book out to 15 rabbis of the day. So in other words, he wasn't hiding the fact, or he wasn't just limiting its distribution to like-minded individuals. Instead, this was a very a clear attempt to undermine Rabbi Paul Hamburger at his own game, as it was. In other words, he's going to attack him from he's going to attack one of his more dense halachic svarim and attack it, arguing that from a halachic perspective, there are numerous issues with the book. So that said, so that's the first work, as it was, the first literary production of Shaul Berlin. And as I mentioned, this got him into some amount of trouble, although his father subsequently defended him, as well as Rabbi Cheskel Landau, the Noda Behuda, who also, if not defending him, he at least agreed that a cheirim by the Beis Din in Hamburg would not have any effect on a resident of Berlin, namely Shaul Berlin. So he agreed with him on that particular point. Now, what happened subsequent to that is the crux of our discussion with regard to forgery, and that was the publication of the Besamim Rosh. And we had seen last week whether or not there's some people that claim or that they attempt to argue or they actually argue but unsuccessfully that they can demonstrate that the Besamim Rosh is actually not a forgery. And we'd seen that in reality that those sorts of claims really don't have a whole lot behind them. However, tonight we're going to get into what exactly happened at the time and the history of those that had attacked the Besamim Rosh. But prior to getting into that, we should just go through what exactly the Besamim Rosh is. And on the title page of the Besamim Rosh, it reads, Sefer Shelos V'Tshuvos Besamim Rosh. This responsa titled Besamim Rosh. Misparam, their number is, Shalosh Meos Tishim V'Shtayim, 392 tshuvos. So they are, these responsa are from the Rush as well as other people. In other words, this is an admixture of tshuvos or responsa not only from the Rush, but also from other people of that same generation. Approximately, it's the early, the late 13th century to the early 14th century. And how did these all get together? So they explain, it explains on the title page, Asafam Gadol Echad Bizman Rabbeinu HaBeis Yosef Zal. One person, one great person gathered them who lived in the time of the Beis Yosef, that is Rabbi Yosef Cairo in the 16th century. Shmo Marenu Harav Rabbeinu Yitzhak De Molina Zal. And the person that collected these, and he actually has an introduction to explain how he came upon these particular responsa, which we'll get to a bit later as well. And this, Rabbi Yitzhak De Molina, excuse me, was the one that brought them together. Hey, they some el hatzfos and mixas hagos devarim shel pilpul asher samti mitzidam, and I am bringing this to print with a few notes. The ekron b'shem kasa deharsana, and I call these notes, these glosses, kasa deharsana. Anochi hatzayir. So who is this? Ani hatzayir. I, the young one, shel ben avi mori hagon marino arav tzvi hirsh. Ha'av Desmond Poe, Shaul, the son of Tzvi Hirsch, who is the chief rabbi here, and where is here? It's printed in Berlin, in the year 1793. So in other words, just to get the background on the book, or the way that the book is actually presented, it's a work mainly attributed to the Rush, or Asher ben Yechiel, who lived, as I mentioned, early 14th century, and as well as other people who lived during the same period. And these were collected in the 16th century, and now they're being published with the notes titled Kasa Deharsana. Okay. Now, we mentioned last week that there were claims of forgery. Now, in reality, although maybe today this has become so common as we've seen the first time that many people claimed forgery, what would possess someone to create a book, not work of fiction or the like, but instead a Jewish book, a Hebrew book that arguably carries some sort of sanctity to it, to forge or to misattribute this book? I mean, it seems like a rather almost incredulous claim. Be that as it may, this was actually, and this is perhaps one of the things going against the authenticity of the Besom Rosh, or I guess more accurately stated, that perhaps would suggest that this was not so unusual for the particular period, and therefore may lend some credence to the idea that at least partially this is a work of forgery, is that there was another person that is clear, that there is no doubt beyond it, that he in fact would fairly often publish various books under or attribute them to earlier authors, when in fact they were all his. And he lived also in Berlin at the same period of time as Shaul Berlin, the editor and publisher of the Besom Rosh. And this person's name is Yitzhak Satnow. And while it really pays to discuss him perhaps in an entire hour, we don't have that opportunity. And just very briefly, he published numerous books that he would attribute to earlier people. Perhaps the most egregious example, or one of the most stunning examples is that he claims to have found a manuscript in the style of Mishle. What he did was, it basically was a sequel to Mishle, and he published this under the title Mishle Asaf. Now, and when in reality, and nowhere, well, we'll see in a moment that for the careful reader that they can figure this out, but on the title page, it doesn't indicate that this is the product of Isaac Satnow. Instead, this is again attributed to a found manuscript that supposedly, follows Mishle. And again, it's written entirely in the style of Mishle. And much like the case of the Besamim Rosh, not only is there the actual text, the sequel to Mishle, but Satnow does have notes on the bottom. So, assuming that Satnow wrote both parts, He wrote a book and then was able to write an entire commentary on the book, which is very, very similar to the case of the Besamim Rosh. That is, in the case of the Besamim Rosh, we have him allegedly forging all the responsa, and then in addition, then being able to write glosses on those responsa. Now, what numerous people point out, and there's actually a fairly lengthy study on this book in particular, this book of Mishlei Asaf, but this has been noted by many, that in many of Satnow's books, he would indicate to the careful reader that he, in fact, was the author. In this particular case, people point to the title itself, Mishlei Asaf. Asaf stands for Yitzchak, with an aleph, Satnow mi Polanya. So in other words, and the pay is from Polanya. So in other words, it's Mishlei, the work of Mishlei, that is by the first initials of his name. In other words, he is alluding to himself as the author. Additionally, what was very, very common would be either in the Haskamos or in the Hakdama, there would be some other hint that this, in fact, is a work of forgery, and Mishlei Asaf is no exception to this. So, for example, the Hakdama is written by a fictitious person by the name of Yosef Lutzato, and it praises Asaf and it praises his particular views, and again, it's written by someone that didn't exist. Or, for example, the Haskamos over here, although they're ostensibly written all at the same time, there are five people that sign on it, and two out of three lived in totally different time periods. So it would be impossible for them to all sign on these Haskamos. So in fact, the Haskama was as well a product of Satnow, the introduction, although attributed to someone else as a product of Satnow. The work itself is a product of Satnow, but again attributed to someone else. So as you can see, he really played up this particular theme. And again, this would have, arguably, again, if you accept that the Pesachim Rosh is equally a work of a misattribution or forgery, it'd be extremely similar to that particular setting. And in fact, Satnow, in another one of his books, in one of the Haskamos, actually arguably offers a justification for this particular practice. And in his work, where, again, it was a sequel, and in this case, it was a sequel to the Zohar. So it's called the Zohar Tinyana, or the second volume of the Zohar, or the second work of the Zohar. And of course, it opens with the words Pasach Reb Yitzchak. And again, you'll recall his name is Yitzchak Satnow. So noting that, in other words, that the first words of the book are Reb Yitzchak opened, i.e. himself, and the rest of the work is really his. And again, it's written not in the style of Mishlei in this particular case. In this particular case, this book is written in the style of the Zohar. So he was very adept at particular literary styles throughout various periods in history. But in one of the Haskamas, which is also a forgery, it actually states in the Haskama, as we'll see, it's a similar idea that we'll see in the Pesachim Rosh in a moment, that I don't know who this person is. However, I have an inkling of who he is, and unlike other people who are plagiarizers, where they steal from others and they claim it as their own, this particular author steals from himself and attributes it to other people. And he actually cites a Gemara there. It's a Gemara that appears in Psachim, Daf Kuf Yadal Amid Aleph, excuse me, and where it says that if a person wants to, if it says, it's recording various things in the name of, I think it's Rabbi Yossi, and this is on Kuf Dalet Amid Aleph, and it says, thought I had the page. Obviously, I must have misplaced it. The Gemara says that if a person wants to say something, he should be. It says as follows. I'm sorry. It's on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and it's and the Gemara says, "Im bekeshes lihichanek hitle beilan gadol." If a person wants to hang himself, make sure to pick a very, very tall tree. And the Aruch explains this in a very it's a fairly straightforward manner. He says, "Pirish im ratzisi l'shal b'dover iser klomer shatat tzarech ladon din chomer shal l'chacham gadol." So basically, if you're dealing with a very important issue, a very weighty issue, then you should make sure to discuss it with a great person. So in other words, if you're dealing with something that has life and death consequences as it is. If you want to deal with then you should discuss it with the Ilan Gadol, with the biggest person that you can find. Now, Rashi actually offers a different explanation. Rashi explains that Lomer Davar Shishama Shishma Labrios Vizkaba Mincha, that if you want to, what you should do is pick a big person to attribute something to if you want people to listen to what you say. That is, it's an appeal to authority, essentially. So if you have something that you want to make sure people follow, say that a really great person said it, and thereby people will be more likely to go ahead and believe that particular statement. And in fact, it's not only Rashi that says this, but this, if, this is actually quoted in the Magen Avraham in Sinan Kufman Vav Sif Beis. He similarly quotes this Rashi saying that if a person wants to ensure that a particular legal position is followed, the person can go ahead and misattribute it to a great person. So it wouldn't be so unusual for what we saw with Satnow. And in fact, Satnow, in a work that arguably is a case of misattribution for a very positive reason, he actually states this explicitly. And this is in the edition of the Kuzari, of course, being a work that was attributed, or it's based upon a story that supposedly happened between the king of the Khazars and various representatives of various religions. And there's a serious question as to whether or not this whole thing is a work of fiction, which is the today is the basic understanding. But Satnow has a peerage to this, a commentary to this work, and in it he actually says in his first statement, and he cites the Kuzari as an example of a case that one is allowed, even though he argues that everyone knows that this is a work of fiction, but it's presented as a work of nonfiction. So therefore, he says it's okay to misattribute various things, and he explains. This is absolutely necessary for those enlightened ones. In other words, to misattribute in order to have their stuff accepted. And this is because most of our co-religionists only look at the glass or the bottle, but not what's inside of it. That they only honor the old works, even if the work is devoid of any wisdom, and they make fun of or they disparage the new works, even if they're full of wisdom. And so therefore he says, Al Cain, therefore, and therefore some of us enlightened ones, the Dorosom, Lahaktim's Mane Chibureim Uliakas Anosha Machirim. Therefore what they've done is that they've attributed to earlier people, the Manis Kabbalah Lev Hamaayan, that people will accept it. And then he says, see what Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes in his work with regard to the Zohar. In other words, this is a subtle reference to the idea that there are some that question the authenticity of the Zohar, claiming that the Zohar is in the same category of works as the Kuzari and perhaps and as Mishlei Asaf and other works that are attributed to earlier people. So essentially, when those people looking at the Besamim Rosh place him in the particular historical period, and that historical period has at least one major example of a person doing exactly what is potentially the case with the Besamim Rosh, and that person again is Yitzchak Satnow. Now, that said, and in light of the fact, and in particular in light of the fact that Shaul Berlin had published this earlier work that already got him in trouble, it seems rather odd that he would have thought that he somehow could have pulled the wool over people's eyes and gotten this, as if it truly was a forgery, past them. And let me explain. If let's say Shaul Berlin had been a run-of-the-mill rabbi, and he went ahead and he published this book that supposedly belongs to one of the Rishonim, and had never written under a pseudonym, had never done anything, you know, that expressed any sort of originality when it came to his literature, so then, you know, no one had any reason to suspect him as it was. But here already you have a person who wrote under a pseudonym, attacked someone else subtly, and did so by publishing this book, and his attacks aren't necessarily overt in some cases. They're vague references to various things that happen, and again, he doesn't put his name on it. So then, did he really think that somehow people would then say, oh, even though this guy produced this book, we're going to let him have a pass on this? It just doesn't seem to be that necessarily would be the case. Now, obviously, this isn't a proof one way or the other. It's just something to keep in mind that when discussing this particular issue. And in fact, in his Hakdama, as well as his father's, to this book, he actually alludes to the fact that he has been persecuted, and this is, as it was, an attempt to get past that. Now, I did not mention that the Besamim Rosh has actually two Haskamas, one of which comes from Shaul Berlin's father, who, as I mentioned, was the chief rabbi of Berlin, very, very well-respected person. His name was Tzvi Hirsch, it's called Tzvi Hirsch Berlin. His works, some of his Svarim have been recently republished, his Tshuvas, I guess, by Mechon Rishlaim called Savarath. And he gives a Haskama as well as the Noda Bihuda. So the Besamim Rosh has two Haskamas, one from Shaul Berlin's father and the other one from the Noda Bihuda. And in his father's Haskama, he says, he seems to allude to the fact that that his son had been questioned, and this is sort of going to take away any question with regard to his son. And he says, "V'yehine kol ayin ro yira v'levavu yavin ki hu maisa rokeach mumulach tahar kodesh u'miyamav min hamigdash yotzei marpa lenefesh u'legayim." He says basically in a very flowery way that the notes, that the glosses that Shaul Berlin has are extremely beautiful and they're very well done. "V'im mitzad dibros b'ni hagon kvar yotzei lo shein ben dole chachmei dorenu hamitim," he says, "and everyone, all the true scholars know how great my son is," which I guess is a reference to those that questioned his son with regard to his prior work. He says, with his fight of Torah, which is a reference, I think, to the idea that he had written this polemic previously, that he is that my son, in other words, Shaul Berlin, is more than ready to go out with an outstretched hand but I guess to do battle, but he has terrific arguments. And he continues on in this vein, and therefore he says, you know, he gives Haskama in the typical fashion that it has a copyright to it and everything else, but it seems that he's alluding to the fact, to this previous question about his son. Now, the Noda Bihuda, interestingly, although the Noda Bihuda was involved in the prior controversy, as I mentioned, he wrote a letter in support of Tzvi Hirsch Berlin's position that the Cheirim wasn't applicable. He says, with regard to the Haskama, he first says, I've been sick, and then he says, I don't really give Haskamas anymore, and then he says, and anyways, when we're talking about this particular book, if we're talking about the portion, Ki Divrei HaRashim Ikra Sefer and Tzrichim L'Shem Haskama, if we're talking about the words of the Rush, then there's no need for us to give any sort of Haskama. But then, this is the particular line that's rather odd, the Imbishvil Hagos Upepum Charifta Shokavar Ma'aloso Shaul Berlin Hagon, he says, also with regard to the glosses of Shaul Berlin, there's no need for me either to give a Haskama, because everyone knows how great he is. That he doesn't let anything, unless it's perfect, be published. So therefore he says, so therefore there's really no need for him to get a Haskama the Haskamas are unnecessary for those great ones. So it's very interesting, especially in light of the fact that Shaul Berlin had been questioned previously, that the Noda Bihuda asserts that because of he was so great and he's such a great guy, there's absolutely no need. If anything, you'd actually think that the opposite is true. So perhaps, as it was, they didn't really view the Noda Bihuda didn't really view his Shaul Berlin's previous work as that big of a deal, but it is just interesting to note that he seemed to deem his greatness so well known that there would be absolutely no need at all to give a particular haskama. Now, while the Nodavi Yehuda didn't think that there was a need to give a haskama, almost immediately with the publication of the Besamim Rosh, that the Besamim Rosh was attacked as a forgery. Now, just to get the dateline right, so the first book to attack the Besamim Rosh is a book called Ze'ev Yitrof, I only have a photocopy of it. It's a very rare book. There we go. And this particular book takes issue. It was printed in the same year that the Besamim Rosh came out, in 1793 as well. And it claims that the reason that the author knows that is that the Besamim Rosh has problems, he doesn't accuse it of being a forgery. He says that it has issues and one can't take it on face value, is because of two reasons. The first reason is because, as we've seen before, is the case, and this is consistently the case even to this day, that eight tshuvos, he identifies eight in the sefer, that eight tshuvos appear to rather come to conclusions that are rather shocking. In other words, that they don't present that these tshuvos don't present what is normative halacha. So therefore, these tshuvos must not be from the Rosh. And just because I think this is important to note, and I'll just go back because there's a question, and the question is how do we know that the Nodavi Yehuda actually wrote this Haskama? And this is not an example, as we saw with Satnow, that the Haskama was forged as well. Well, the reason we know that the Haskama was most likely from the Nodavi Yehuda is, first of all, we don't have anyone that questions the authenticity of the Haskama. There don't seem to be any internal indications, as we have in the case of Satnow, where he plays either because of the years don't fit or because of the fact that it's all tongue-in-cheek. We don't have any indication that it isn't. Moreover, because the Nodavi Yehuda was actually a close family friend, and I think he was related to the Berlins, it'd be very odd for Shaul Berlin to forge a Haskama that his father would know immediately that it was actually a forgery. It would be easy to find out that it was actually a forgery. But now just referring to the Ze'ev Yitrof. So what he did was he claimed that because of that these particular tshuvos are very odd, or that they don't, again, represent normative halachas, so therefore there must be some issue with these tshuvos. And then he pointed to a second thing. And although on the one hand seems to be something that perhaps can point that the Besamim Rosh is not a forgery, on the other hand it was taken by others to actually prove that this was sort of the first indication that the Besamim Rosh is a forgery. And that is that one of the tshuvos that appear in the Besamim Rosh is Simen Mem, number 40, which deals with the question of whether or not a person is allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. Now, this particular question, at the time that the Besamim Rosh was published, was a hot topic, mainly because the Nodavi Yehuda took a more lenient position with regard to shaving on Chol HaMoed, allowing in certain limited circumstances one to shave on Chol HaMoed. And it was very, very controversial. So in this particular case, we have the Rosh alluding to a position of the Rabbeinu Tam, where the Rabbeinu Tam again takes a more lenient position regarding shaving a Chol HaMoed, and in his glosses, in Shaul Berlin's glosses, he goes off on the topic more generally, and he takes issue. He first cites to the tshuva for the Nodavi Yehuda, or the statement from the Nodavi Yehuda that allows for shaving in certain circumstances, and then mentions that his father, however, takes a different position, but his father's position is likely incorrect, and he attempts to prove it through various gemaras. Now, this actually, it's just somewhat ironic that when it comes to the case of shaving a Chol HaMoed, it seems that a very similar form of this debate, that is, between a father and a son, with regard to this particular issue of shaving a Chol HaMoed, actually became an issue a few years later. There were two Italian scholars, a father and a son, Avram Reggio and Yitzhak Shmuel Reggio, known as Yashar, based on his initials. And Yashar came out with the book called Maimer Tigalachas, where he also allowed for shaving in it, that one can shave on Chol HaMoed, assuming that one shaved prior to Chol HaMoed. And then an anonymous pamphlet came out called Tigalachas HaMaimer, or cutting or shaving the Maimer, i.e. Maimer Tigalachas. So it's a play on the title. Now it's anonymous, and today we know actually that the father wrote it against his son's own work. So we have again the case that we see over here, that the father and son don't particularly agree about this particular issue about shaving a Chol HaMoed. Be that as it may, so in his gloss, returning to Shaul Berlin, in his gloss he allows, based on this tshuva and partially based on this tshuva of some Rosh, he wants to go off and say that shaving should therefore be allowed on Chol HaMoed. Now, what happened was it seems that his father took issue with this, and to such a degree, and he didn't want to upset his father, at least that's what he says, that Shaul Berlin actually retracted his statement that appears in his notes. And what, that's what you have here, up on the screen, which is titled Moda Rabba, or a loud proclamation, or an overt proclamation. And this is from Shaul Berlin. It's a single leaf, and anyone can see this leaf. If you can't see it on the screen here, it's available as one of the books on, as I mentioned last week, one of the great resources for books and other items such as this, which is just a broadside, is Hebrew University's the library's website, the JNUL's website, where they have a digital book project where they have numerous documents and books up in their entirety, and this is one of the things that appears there. So if you want, you can look at that as well there. But I'll just read the relevant parts. Lain Hakari the Sifri Kasa the Harsonus, and then anyone that looks at my book, Kasa the Harsonus number 40, Shiksapi Daiti Shabazakin Yeshla Hatsarim Giluach Kode Mamoi Kedasarin Tam, that which I write that a person is allowed to go ahead and shave if he shaved on prior to Chol HaMoed, he can go ahead and shave on Chol HaMoed. Hine ha'ezeh b'chashri ki yatasi lodon b'davar chadash, v'eis emadidi perek ha'hu, lo nesani ha'zman l'hatsiya davar l'fnei kvod adoni avi mori ha'gon nira. When I wrote this, I didn't have time to present my conclusion to my father. Ki eitzah alai hamlocha, I was very busy, and there was a whole thing, and he says, however, many numerous errors were in my book, and this is one of them. He says, "Va'ata." This is like the 11th line down, the first word on the line. "Va'ata higili adoni avi mori shigam hu omed al chokem elu." He also is one of those that disagrees and does not allow one to shave on Chol HaMoed. "Ve'hem baksuvim imo el shlo ava bam ve'lachein hilimom." He hasn't printed them, but he has it. "Ve'lo hiviam afterach pein lomer me'ata." Therefore, now I want to state, "Av sheish imadi lachazek devarei b'hach rishpa." Even though, in truth, I could provide even a additional support for my opinion that this is allowed, etc. Because I found out that my father disagrees with me, therefore I've decided that I'm going to drop my opinion and I have to listen to him. And even when I'm in the one that's being, even when he's the one that's Mako and I'm Machmer, and in this particular case where he's the one that's Machmer, where he is stringent and I'm the one that is lenient. So therefore, he says, I am retracting my statement that appears in Kasa the Harsan. So what you have over here is Shaul Berlin admitting that he made an error. So in the Zev Yitrov, he uses the fact that Shaul Berlin that he was able to let his ego go and admit to the fact that he made an error. He uses this as a proof, quote unquote proof, to show that there are problems with it. And he explains, he says as follows. So we already know that he retracted his opinion with regard, and I'm reading from the introduction of the Zev Yitrov, that he retracted with regard to his position on shaving a Chol HaMoed. So therefore, this seems to indicate that there's something fishy going on here. Now, one could take his retraction that way. The other way to take his retraction is that he was extremely honest, and he realized that even though he took this particular position, that Shaul Berlin took this particular position, he wasn't going to take this particular position if it disagreed with his father. But be that as it may, this was the first attack on the Besamim Rosh. Then what happened was, and again we have to recall, again, the Mitzvah Yaksiel, which was an attack on Rafal Katzenelenbogen. Rafal Katzenelenbogen's son writes a letter to Moshe Nigra saying that he just got this book by Sam Rosh and it's published by Shaul Berlin. And the problem with it is that there are 13 tshuvos, if you look, that they're all, again, the same problem that the Zev Yitrov had. The 13 tshuvos that seem to disagree with normative Judaism, or with normative halacha, not necessarily normative Judaism, but normative halacha. So what you have is things attributed to the Rush that just don't make sense. So again, this is not an attack on the authenticity of the manuscript per se. It's just based upon the fact that the substance was disagreeable. And then this went back and forth. And what actually happened was this eventually led to the idea that, and other people got involved, most notably Rav Mordechai Benay, who was Captain Alan Bogan's student. And he also writes, he identifies it's Tenchuos that he has problems with. And he states, and this is from a work called the Hema Baksuvim, which is available online at Hebrew Books. And he, again, he notes that these seem to be, he describes these tshuvos as follows. Alzeh, he says, regarding the work, generally, Alzeh yalili v'yasidi ha liyom tzara v'chashecha asher meyolom lo nihisi e tzara kezos liyakov v'meni yoshia. It's a horrible day, everyone should cry. Umi zeh yimei shana kam chibor chaber echa mechibore chibor latuma hu hefek plila, that there's this horrible work, this unholy work that was printed, that it placed a stumbling block before everyone. And he continues on this, and he actually identifies, and particularly, which tshuvas he dislikes. And what's interesting is that, and this is just as an aside, that the way that he describes these tshuvas is not actually accurate, at least to a degree. For example, he discusses the seventh tshuva that he has a problem with, although he doesn't identify them by number. Seventh one is Sha'asa l'sapri tiyas mitzrayim b'lel pesach le'ibato ona b'pesach. He describes this tshuva where the Psalm Rosh allegedly says that you're not allowed to Sha'asa l'sapri tiyas mitzrayim b'lel pesach, that you're not allowed to discuss the Exodus story, Shalavata ona b'pesach, that a person won't come to do away with his marital obligations. And in reality, if you look at the Pesachim Rosh, the Pesachim Rosh doesn't actually say this. Instead, he says something slightly more subtle. He says that a person isn't required to stay up all night like they do appears to be advocated in the Gemara and the Mishnah, as well as the famous story that of the people in Bnei Brak, that they sat there all night until sunrise. And he says a person is only obligated to stay up a reasonable amount of time because there are other competing obligations that one may have. So it's not as Sha'asa l'sapri tiyas mitzrayim. Instead, it's just explaining that one is not prohibited from discussing the Exodus, which of course would be antithetical to the entire idea of Pesach. Instead, it's merely that the obligation to discuss Exodus is more limited than is otherwise presented. That's just one example. There are other examples as well. But be it as it may, again, it's being attacked. The Pesachim Rosh is being attacked not because the manuscript or there's some indicia that the manuscript itself is a forgery, but because some tshuvos don't seem to agree with the conclusions from the tshuvos. Now, what's amazing is these people only identify, in the case of the Zev Yitro, he identifies eight, and in the other cases, either 13 or 10 tshuvos, a lot of these overlap. There are, if you recall, there's 392 tshuvos in this book. And all they can find that they have problems with are at most 13, which in and of itself is kind of telling, because if the whole basis for claiming that something is a forgery solely because of the conclusions, I'm not a math genius, but it seems that in less than, I guess, what is it, it's like 3% of the cases, in 3% of the cases there's some problem, therefore the other 97, and I may be off in the percentages, but a very large percentage they have absolutely no problem with, but then they're claiming that the entire work is a work of forgeries. Now, what's interesting is that Shaul Berlin's father, again, the chief rabbi of Berlin, actually went ahead and responded to these attacks. He responds both in private letters as well as in a small pamphlet, which hopefully is going to come up now. Yes, in the small pamphlet, which the entire pamphlet I have online here, and you're welcome to look or at your leisure, but he actually begins in the more logical place. And that is where he says at the end of this paragraph, let's see. Hopefully I can get this to work. Where this arrow hopefully is, and I'll just read it aloud because it may be small on some of your screens. It says as follows. So this is Zvi Hirsch Berlin, the chief rabbi of Berlin, one of the largest communities, Jewish communities, and the most respected Jewish communities in Europe at the time. He was related to a whole bunch of rabbis. It seems like his yichus was phenomenal. And as I mentioned, with regard to Zvi Hirsch Berlin, there's no question about, no one questions his his credentials, and as I mentioned, his works have recently been republished. But he says, "Vehine, and now, ne'idi alai shemayim va'aretz, heaven and earth can testify, ki ha-sefer ha-zeh, hotak li mifnei harav ha-muflog u'mashulah mori Shlomo. My son, Shlomo, who eventually became the chief rabbi of London, copied this. Zeh ke'eser shana, 10 years ago. Va'ani ba'atzmi, and I myself, that is Tzvi Hirsch himself, asisi l'hamatechos b'seder ha-turim b'yosei b'formanda." I assume this means after it was typeset. So it's he himself was involved in setting up this thing, and he had seen the actual manuscript. Va'avodah sheru eitzli me'osan ha'nashim po'asher samati ke'es malina la v'karbo v'shamto. Now I hear that people are claiming that this is not, that this is incorrect. In other words, so he's willing to testify that he, in that the manuscript, that issue here, now, granted, the manuscript, if you recall, was only around 200 years old, because it was copied during the time of Rabbi Yosef Cairo. So it's not the original manuscript that we have from the Rush, but instead, it's merely a copy of a collection of tshuvos. That said, he says, I had that manuscript in my house for 10 years, and my other son, not Shaul, but the other son, Shlomo, who everyone agrees was all good, he went ahead and copied it. And then he says, and he continues, on the second page, over here, in the paragraph that starts with Bangkok, which is the second paragraph on the right side, Ubangkok, he now addresses, so he first addresses the manuscript itself. That is, as a side to everyone else who's just discussing the content, he's actually discussing whether or not this manuscript ever existed, and he's testifying that he had it in his house for a period of 10 years. And then he addresses the question about the substance. And he says, Ubenkach, Ubenkach, Batsuchne Bekonish La Yavi Mitchala Yadena, Basafa Rabba Vikra Hadin, Kola Vishachisa Lo Hashkansubi, that he says, and no one's going to err based on this. And there's no problem with this book. And if it's true that you'll find various laws or customs that we don't follow today, Mishnah lo zazel min komo. That doesn't affect anything. He says, and even if it's things that, you know, you shouldn't tell people that aren't that knowledgeable, hine apayim kahena b'shasu v'poskin. There are literally thousands of examples of these that one can find. That is, thousands of examples of things that we don't necessarily follow today, or that we disagree with the conclusions. The shas of a poskim in both the Talmud as well as the later codes. V'lo choshu lam chachamim mishum tuma. And no one claims that these works are therefore forgeries. He says, and no one claims that all these things are bad, and that they actually identify all these things solely that this way they can laugh at these particular ideas that they disagree with them. And he continues, and he says that it doesn't really matter that we don't necessarily agree with them. That in and of itself is meaningless. So he makes these arguments, saying, first of all, that the manuscript seems to be genuine, and that it doesn't really matter about the content. And indeed, if you look at the introduction that appears in the Besamim Rosh, and this, again, can cut both ways, there is an introduction, and we don't have time to read through the whole thing, from this Yitzhak, who copied the manuscript. And he explains, just very briefly, that the way that he came about this manuscript was that he was, I forget, it was in Alexandria, where someone showed him a pile, basically, of tshuvos, and he realized that while much of the tshuvos of the Rush had been printed, some of these in this pile had never been printed before, so therefore he went ahead and copied them. But interestingly, he actually says, on numerous occasions, he says, and again, this is supposed to be from that person, he says, how do we know whether or not these actually came from the Rush. And in his Hakdama, he deals with this problem. How do we know these came from the Rush? How do we know these came from the Rush? He asks on numerous times, and he explains, because I saw the stack of papers, I copied these, although some of them don't match up. And indeed, he points out that even if it's true, so as he's preempting all these arguments, he says, even if it's true, Yan Haman Misnagdin with Daitozal, that on some occasions they actually contradict explicit positions of the Rush. So he says, Avogam b'tshuvaso shenitfasu timsa b'socham sosrim zelazeh. He says, so what? Even in his printed responsa already, we have examples where the Rush and many other cases of the early authorities and even later authorities, where one can find seeming contradictions. So that in of itself doesn't really mean anything. The Alpha Darvish Psakov, and even things that he presents clear legal conclusions. He says, that doesn't tell you anything. So he says, this is what happens in many of the works. In other words, he's preempting some of the claims or the problems, the alleged problems of the Psalm Rosh, he's saying that these ideas that you find that they disagree, or how do we know that it's actually from him, it's all good. In other words, there's no way internally, based upon the substance, to prove one way or the other that this is actually a forgery. Now, this, if we look, however, through the prism of Satnow, this particular statement may be actually a mark against the Psalm Rosh for the following reason. If we assume, as we do in the case of Satnow, that many times he would sort of say these things that are tongue-in-cheek, that is, he lets on a close reader that actually reads the Haskamas and reads the Hakdama, the material that's typically skipped over, or that isn't paid much attention. So this would be an example, as it was, is that in the introduction, he's alluding to the fact, as he says, if you're going to ask, Yeshli Stapekvam, one can question, Imi Mi Rabbeinu Usher Yatsu. Did these really go out? Are these really the product of the Rush? So this is something that would be not uncommon to find in something that Satnow wrote, that is, sort of alluding to the fact that there's a question about the authenticity of these things. So, as I said, on the one hand, it seems to preempt some of these questions. On the other hand, it may actually cut against them because this seems to indicate a bit of sarcasm on his part. Now, one of the things that is worth noting as well is the position of the Chida. The Chida is Chaim Yosef David Azulai, and when it comes to books, he's actually extremely important because he has one of the earliest bibliographies of Hebrew books, and it's not really a bibliography. In fact, the way that Brisman, as I mentioned last week, there's a terrific book on the history of Jewish bibliography by Shimon Brisman, and he refers to this as a biobibliography. That is, it's a combination of biographies as well as information about books. So it's unlike more scientific bibliography, you know, that would only provide the amount of pages it has and the size of the book and the author and the place of publication. Here, he provides stories and he provides, you know, other background about either the author or the book. So the book is known as Shem HaGdolim, was originally known as the name Varach HaChamim, and then it was taken on the name Shem HaGdolim and was reorganized by Ben Yaakov, another bibliographer that we spoke about last week. In the entry for the Besamim Rosh, he notes that there's some question about the authenticity of it, and he says as follows, and this again is in the entry in Mareches Svarim, which is the section that's divided between people and books, and under the entry for Besamim Rosh, he says, "Be'eshma achrei korash ki yesh b'sefer zek tzas tzvarim zarim," that after this was printed, it was heard, or there was a rumor, that there are many strange things in this particular work. "Ve'yomer sh'amatek arishon ba'aretz turgumam miksav yad rivitzok dey Molina Yeshlok Shod Shahosef Begara." Perhaps in the course of copying, he perhaps added that Yitzhak Molina added to the book. He says, therefore, one shouldn't rely on certain things here because perhaps it's a misattribution, the divasan, and that's enough. However, he continues and he says, "Biachrei zman reisi b'tfos divrei hagon hagadol hamaforsam." Ram Va'abdesim, the Kiva Kedosha Berlin. I saw printed what we just read, this particular defense of Shaul Berlin, by his father, Tzvi Hirsch Berlin. The Omer Mar, Kishama Motzi Diba al Sefer Nizkel, that he heard that people were questioning the authenticity of the Sefer. The Hefetz Vehediach Kol Hadvarim Yagirim Vasadusa de Rav, Ki Ha Sefer Tomim Ksivbo, Vahaya Eser Shanim Bebeso Terim Shnitfas. And he says, and he writes that he himself testifies, as we saw, that the work was done 10 years in his house prior to publication. Vahani le yikar saduso, and we should allow this perfect or pretty testimony, in other words, that it's a legitimate testimony, and that's it. So, and he actually met Zvi Hirsch Berlin, because another one of the Chidah's fascinating books is a book of this travel law called Magal Tov, and he actually describes his meeting with Zvi Hirsch Berlin, and he actually held him in fairly high regard. So now what we have here is the difficulty in trying to determine whether or not the B'Salom Rosh is actually a forgery. So just to go back, what we have is almost immediately after its publication, there's books that are published, in the case of the Zev Yitrov, or various tshuvos or letters that are publishing that are questioning whether or not the B'Salom Rosh is really an authentic work of the Rosh. And then we have, as we saw, Zvi Hirsch Berlin, Shaul Berlin's father, defending the authenticity of the Rosh. Now, one of the things that's interesting is that if we return to the idea, as we saw in the case perhaps of the Hakdama, that this is an example of sort of a subtle way of poking fun at the reader, that in fact he's alluding to the fact that Shaul Berlin is alluding to the fact that this may be a forgery, is that people point to other such similar, as it was Where's Waldo, or you know, Find the Hidden Picture, these allusions in the book where one can find allusions to the author himself, i.e. Shaul Berlin. And one of the things that they point to is actually the number of tshuvos. It's highlighted on the title page. It says there's 392 tshuvos. It's the second thing on the title page. It says 392 tshuvos. So 392 in Hebrew is Shin Sadi Beis, which conforms with Shaul Ben Tzvi, either Berlin. So it's either Shin is Shaul, the Beis is Ben, and then Tzvi is his father Tzvi. Or it could just be Shaul Ben Tzvi, and the Beis doesn't count, and then Berlin, his final name. So in other words, so what you would have here is he's alluding to the fact that he's an author. He's the author. And even more, I guess that this is more of a stretch, but Ruben Margolius points out in an article that the tshuvos are called Shilas tshuvos, and it says Min HaRosh, as opposed to the Rishonim, they typically would not refer to them as we do. So the Rashba did not refer to himself as the Rashba, instead he referred to them as Shlomo Ben Aderes. And the Ran was Rabbeinu Nissim. And similarly, the Rush would not have referred to himself as the Rush, he would refer to him as Rav Asher ben Yechiel. So why over here does it say Rush? So he says, this is flipping around the letters Rush, this is Rav Shaul, or something similar to that. But that's, again, somewhat of a stretch. Now, another example, perhaps, of this is regarding one of the more controversial tshuvos, and that is Tshuva Resh Mem. And Tshuva Resh Mem, the question that the Rosh supposedly was asked was whether or not on Purim someone, a sofer that wrote a Megillah, got very drunk on Purim, and while he was drunk, he said many things of many heretical thoughts that were the sources were from various philosophical works. So whether or not the sofer and the Megillah is kosher, because whether or not the sofer should be treated as a min. And the response is that no, that this is okay, and in fact he sort of, as the Rush allegedly says, that that this isn't a big deal, that the person would go ahead and look at philosophy, it's not the end of the world. And this is not a reason to call someone an apikoris. So this is in support of philosophy. Now what's interesting is that if you look at the page setup, the page setup is as follows. So hopefully you can see this. Right here is Tshuva Resh Mem, and that's the one that I just discussed. And if you notice, it's sort of the thing that follows it is Resh Mem Aleph, which appears almost at the bottom of that tshuva. So this could be a play on the idea that there's a very famous dispute between Resh Mem Aleph, otherwise known as the Rama, and Rav Shlomo Luria, the Marshal, about whether or not philosophy is allowed. So, and the Rama took the position that it would be okay. So over here what you have is the Rama, as it was Resh Mem Aleph signing the tshuva having to do with philosophy. So these things are very difficult to prove, whether or not they are intentional, or whether or not these are just the products of over-imaginative people that are trying to find somewhere in the text that they can somehow link Shaul Berlin. Now, one of the books that we do know was written by Shaul Berlin, and this, of course, did not help him at all regarding his stature in our case, was another polemic. And this polemic is extremely harsh regarding as it was regular orthodoxy at the time. I think today what was then regular orthodoxy, or at least the divisions between the Haskalah and regular orthodoxy, can roughly be divided, although this is inexact, between, let's say, the modern orthodox and the Haredim today, although again that's very inexact. There's a book put out by Anatoly Hertz Wesley called Der Wirtschaft und Emmes, where he argued for various educational reforms, and this got him into a whole lot of trouble. And one of the books that was written to defend himself, to defend Wesley, was originally an anonymous book, but we actually know that it was written by Shaul Berlin, called Ksav Yosher. And Ksav Yosher, Berlin himself wrote this, and in it, it contains many non-traditional views. And in particular, he actually takes the position, this is early on in this book, although this is a very scathing review of many things having to do with the way that Judaism was practiced in the day, and also a defense of a highly controversial work, the Der Wirtschaft und Emmes. This book in its entirety, at least right now, is available on Hebrew Books, and one can download it, even though typically they don't have these sorts of more controversial works on Hebrew Books. But be it as it may, it's available at HebrewBooks.org, Ksav Yosher. And in one particular paragraph, and we don't have time to read the whole thing, he basically discusses why it is that we celebrate, as it was, we celebrate all these horrible events in Judaism. We have lo od el shezeh ikar hakol shetzifu mitzvah minhagim b'chol dar v'dar v'chol shana v'shana v'chol yom v'yom. He says basically every single day, every hour of the day, what people are doing are adding, and this is a refrain even to this day, people are adding additional mitzvahs, additional obligations all the time. They're coming up with new things people have to do. And he says one of them is zachinu l'zeh, and we were zocheh. We have the tremendous privilege of getting additional mitzvahs, additional obligations. One of these examples is Ayde Hagzeros Hatzaros Abbas Aleinu Bein Hagoyim. Ki kama v'kama tfilos noros bakashos somas v'tanios nisrabu lanu adei tzeroseinu. It's great, he says, because of all the tragedies that happened to Jews, we have all these great prayers today. So obviously this is very, he's doing this in a satirical manner. And he continues and he says, this is all tongue-in-cheek, saying how great it is that on Chaf Sivan, which was a horrible massacre, we now have all these, we have a tainus, and we have the prayers, and he ends off by saying, well, what could we possibly be happy about? And he says, the only thing we could possibly be happy about is, what are we sad about that these people died, because it, ultimately these people allowed for us to do all these great mitzvahs. He says, the only thing we're sad about, again, play on the original, the only thing we're sad about is because these great rabbis died, they're no longer able to provide even additional mitzvahs, because if every minute that they lived longer, they presumably would have come up with even more obligations that we'd have to do. And the whole book is full of these ideas that are very critical of the way that Judaism was practiced. So this obviously lends some support to the idea that Shaul Berlin wasn't a more traditional scholar. Now that said, it doesn't necessarily mean that the B'Shan Rosh is a forgery. It's just, again, it's in the same vein as the original work that he did, the Mitzvah Yoksiyo. Now, in reality, at least right now, one of the reasons that we're unable to tell whether or not the B'Shan Rosh is a forgery or not, or portions of it are forgeries, or there's a misattribution, is because we're lacking some knowledge. And one example of the lack of such knowledge is that at one point in time, the library in St. Petersburg or Leningrad actually has or had a phenomenal collection of Hebrew books. In fact, recently Machon Ofek published an alternative version of the well-known Musar work called Nesilas Yesharim, which, unlike the standard version, this version is printed in a dialogue, and this is based upon a manuscript that they got out of this particular library. And this particular library actually has a catalog that was published, although the catalog is incomplete. And the entry for the B'Semim Rosh, it actually says that they had a copy, he says, that the Leningrad Library's copy had, Im Hosapos Rabos Vigilion Vitikunim Be'etzem Ksav Yad Harev Shaul. It was Saul Berlin's own copy with numerous glosses. So Be'ezim Akomos Kosov Ki Nishmat Meha Matzvis. And on many occasions he writes, you know, I'm writing this in because this was left out by the publisher. So these additions may provide additional insight to whether or not, for example, we're missing something in some of the more controversial tshuvas or not. And this was actually, he says, this was the one that was sent to his father. And in fact, on the binding it said this was belonged to Tzvi Hirsch, the chief rabbi of Berlin. But as I said, this was in the library in Leningrad, and to this day, no one's ever been able to locate this particular copy, which would be extremely helpful in determining whether or not there's anything else to work with in the case of the B'Shan Rosh. Moreover, today there have been various attempts to analyze from a textual perspective the language and style that appears in books to determine whether or not the books conform exactly with the alliterations or with other things that are unique to a particular author. So if a particular author, for example, uses a particular word or particular word choices all the time, so, and then one can show, and again, those weren't necessarily noticeable until we were able to sift them via, you know, an algorithm. So if one can show that the chuvos that are attributed to the Rush and that the Summer Rush conform with those particular chuvos that we know are from the Rush, that may, or not that case, so that may lend more or less credence to the idea that the Besom Rosh actually came, was either the product of the Rush or was not a product of the Rush. But as I said, from at the end of last week as well as the beginning of this week, it seems that this particular type or this particular of attempt to misattribute actually has some support. As I mentioned, those claim either the Gemara Pesachim actually allows for this, or as we saw at the end of last week, that Rav Matosiyahu Strassun says, really, the idea that it matters whether or not it is from the Rush or isn't from the Rush, it really shouldn't, because if it all should be based upon the content. And much like those want to claim that the 8 or the 12 or the 13 chuvos are difficult to understand, and therefore this points to the fact that those particular chuvos are not from the Rush, so if the other chuvos have content, if we're just going to focus on content, and they do have content, both the chuvos themselves as well as the glosses demonstrate a phenomenal, phenomenally knowledgeable author, so shouldn't we just look at the content? And in fact, these chuvos, whether or not they're forgeries, are actually extremely important and have been quoted for numerous important disputes. And although we don't have time to get through all of them, as I mentioned last week, we have the case of the suicide, and whether or not suicide is treated any differently, and today it seems that the normative halach actually follows the way that it appears in the Besom Rosh, that a suicide is afforded all the regular burial rituals and the like. Similarly, there's a particular chuv in the Besom Rosh that comes up all the time, and that is that he wanted to abolish kitnios. And he explains that kitnios has no real source to it. And this comes up every year almost. Pesach time, there are people that write articles, and they espouse the view that kitnios should no longer be applicable. So if the assertions of the Besom Rosh do carry weight, so then obviously these sorts of issues may be clarified, whether based upon the Besom Rosh actually makes sense or is we're able to attribute it to the Rush, or in the alternative, one has to deal with all the issues that come up with the fact that Shaul Berlin wrote these other books that are extremely or very, very controversial, and whether or not that in and of itself is telling, and we can then say that the Besom Rosh itself is also a forgery. So that's it for the Besom Rosh, and we're going to move on to another, probably the second most well-known case of forgery next week, hopefully. But if anyone has any other questions, please feel free to ask them. Either you can, I think, turn on your mics and ask just by pressing the talk button or by doing it in the chat, or, as I mentioned, you can send me an email as well if you want to, and I'll stay on for a few minutes to see if anyone has any questions. Thanks.